You are Locked On MLB Prospects, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And here's your host, Aram Layton.
This is Locked On MLB Prospects, your go-to podcast on the future stars of Major League Baseball. As always, I'm your host, Aram Layton. I'm the founder of JustBaseball.com, as well as a prospect, writer, and analyst. And in today's episode, we are going to talk about the Seattle Mariners, one of the best systems in baseball. I just put out a top 10 for them. As I go through each of these top 10s across Major League Baseball, I had to start with the Mariners. And you can put a toss-up with the Rays and the Mariners as the best system, and there's a lot of cases you can make for both sides. But what I really like is that they are deep. I would say that the Mariners are even a little bit more top-heavy with the elite players that they have. While the Rays, with the graduation of Wander Franco, they have some elite prospects, no doubt about it, but they are more of a depth organization. But they have a ridiculous amount of depth now when you look at Tommy Romero and Taj Bradley and some of these other arms that have somewhat emerged out of nowhere. That has just been really not that surprising when you look at the Rays, because it's just what the Rays do. But I mean, if you look at Tommy Romero's numbers, that guy was one of the more called about players at the deadline, and a lot of people don't even know who he is, or most called about prospect, I should say, which is fascinating. But we're here today to talk about the Mariners, and I had a lot of fun going through this top 10, which you can find at justbaseball.com, where I went into some deep write-ups onto each of the 10 prospects. Of course, the several players that already appeared on my top 100 list for Just Baseball, there was five of them for the Mariners, actually six of them, excuse me, as Matt Brash just cracked that top 100 as well, and he gets the call-up, so I'm looking forward to finally getting to see Matt Brash pitch at the big league level. That should be really fun and help this Miracle Mariners team make their last little push here. He is the type of player that could go, like I said before, right into the bullpen and make an impact, so I'll talk about him in a little bit, but let's start with the elite guys and the guys at the top. We'll go from 1 to 10, and no surprise here on who number one is in the Mariners system. I mean, he's my number three overall prospect in baseball, and you can make the case for him being as good as anybody. When you look at the top 100 list, there's really nobody else who has the combination of physicality, pure power, feel to hit, and athleticism outside of maybe Bobby Witt Jr., and that's my number one prospect in baseball. So when you look at Julio, who, by the way, is on his way to Seattle right now, I believe it's just to go watch and support the team, but he is pretty damn close to big league ready and should have a shot to crack the opening day roster next year. Where he's going to fit in will be interesting. It's more so where are some of the other guys going to fit in, the Jake Fraley's, the even Kyle Lewis's. Where are they going to go? Jared Kelnick has been coming alive, which has been really fun to see, but he is not good in center field. Julio Rodriguez is a corner guy. I think they're going to bank on Jared Kelnick being able to get better in center field, but he's been one of the worst defensive outfielders this year. His reads aren't great. He is still working on his routes as well, but I think he'll be fine. I think he can at least be average out there, and I know the initial thought might be that Kyle Lewis goes back out there, and that could be the case, but my only concern is Kyle Lewis has now had multiple knee injuries and continues to have these recurring lower body issues. Maybe it's better for him to move to a corner. Another player who was not a supreme center fielder, he'd make some big plays, but overall was fairly average. I would probably rather see Jared Kelnick try to develop out there, especially with some of the injury risk that comes with Kyle Lewis, and you don't know if he's lost a step already with some of these knee injuries. The first one was catastrophic, and now he's re-aggravated that same knee. So hopefully not too much of an issue, but I think it would be safer to move Kyle Lewis to a corner. Regardless, Julio Rodriguez is going to be playing in a corner as well, and he's going to be an above-average defender out there with his athleticism, with his arm. But obviously, the big value comes with his massive potential offensively. The chance to be a high-average hitter, high power guy that does it all. And he's even an above average runner. So he really is dynamic. I could see 280, 290 with 30 homers, no problem. I think he's got more in the tank than that. But it's going to be interesting to see how he gets acclimated. There was some concerns about swing and miss. I don't see any major concerns with swing and miss. He's way ahead of his years with his approach. And I expect him to be a guy that has an OPS that hovers around 900 and hitting 30 to 35 home runs with sneaky athleticism. athleticism too. We're seeing him swipe bags. We're seeing him do little things on the base paths as well. He is going to be a superstar. I really do believe he's going to be a superstar, and I don't think that's very crazy to say at this point. But I've been a big fan of his for a long time, and I think he's already shown enough in the minor leagues to prove that he's ready to go at the big league level. Number two on the list for the Mariners farm system, and he's number 13 overall in my top 100, it's Noelvi Marte. Noelvi Marte, a child still, 19 years old, but you wouldn't know it by the way he hits the baseball. He's already hit a ball 447 feet this year. The raw power, the raw bat speed is ridiculous for a guy who's 6'1", 180. What I really like to compare him to is everybody talks about the prolific power despite the limited stature of Marco Luciano. And Marco Luciano, I believe, is 6'2", 185 or something like that. That is about the same size as Noelvi Marte, and Marte puts up some pretty similar ridiculous exit velos and raw power. I think Marco Luciano's just a little bit more so on this other level, especially with that one home run he hit off of Ryan Rolison. But we're talking about 19-year-olds who are 6'1", 180, 190 at the most, and they are putting up exit velos that are better than some of the most powerful hitters in the minor leagues and better than most hitters in the major leagues. So you have to be encouraged by that when you look at a Noelvi Marte. I have currently a 40 grade on the hit tool, but a chance to have a 50 grade on the hit tool. 50 raw power with a chance for 60, 45 present, 55 future game power, probably 60 game power now that I've seen a little bit more. He is a plus runner now with a chance to slow down a little bit. There's a big question on the defense, and that's what I'm a little bit worried about. I think he might end up moving to third, but the bat is the value here with Marte, and if he moves to third, he's got a good enough arm to make it work over there. I think the approach has improved a lot for him. He was really producing pretty good walk and strikeout numbers. 12% walk rate in low A, 22% K rate is very solid. I'm interested to see how that continues against upper level pitching, because sometimes the walk rates are a little bit deceiving because the pitchers in low A just have crazy stuff and no command. But he got a little bit of a taste, 8 games in high A. And I like the at-bats, really. I watched those games when he got called up. It seemed like he was comfortable. He did strike out 33% of the time in those 33 plate appearances, but 11 Ks, 33 plate appearances when you're just getting moved up to high A as a 19-year-old. What I was more focused on was not the results and just how comfortable he looked in the box. I thought his takes looked good. His swing looked good. He's going to be very comfortable in high A next year. I'm willing to bet on that one, but I am interested to see how the walk rate translates when he goes to better and better pitchers with better command at that level. But overall, I mean, the power is ridiculous. Like I said, I had not really been able to appreciate the game power too. Now seeing him run into baseballs a bit more in games, that totally bumped the 55 to 60 in terms of his future game power. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, this guy is really a potential 30 to 35 home run guy, just like Julio Rodriguez. I mean, the Mariners could be really damn scary, and they might even make the playoffs this year without Kyle Lewis. And now you're gonna have Kyle Lewis back. You're gonna have Jared Kelnick, who will be better than he was last year. Noelvi Marte is still a couple years away. Julio Rodriguez will be ready, though, so this is a lot of fun. Going into another guy that will be ready to go for next year, it's George Kirby. George Kirby's number 3 on my top prospect list here for the Mariners and number 19 overall on my top 100 list. And George Kirby, it's a pretty simple equation, and you know I've talked about him a ton on this podcast if you've been listening for a while. It's just really high velo in elite command. He always had the elite command. That's what the enticing aspect was to his game when he was at Elon, a mid-major school, yet he was able to really command a lot of scouts' attentions and major league team attention after a strong summer in the Cape as a closer, and then just continuing to dot the strike zone all over both sides of the plate with multiple pitches. He still needs to see the quality of the secondaries improve a little bit, but the fastball at the upper 90s after seeing his stuff tick up in the last year and a half, it was around the alternate training site time, maybe a little bit before that, where the stuff really ticked up, and we saw that fastball touch triple digits at times. And with the way he's able to locate it, that's scary. The secondary stuff is still coming along. We don't really have a clear cut go-to out pitch for him right now. I would say the curveball has flashed plus to me. The changeup is flashed above average, but with his command, could be a plus pitch, and the slider lags behind. So I think it could be a fastball, changeup, curveball mix for him, and maybe a slider that he could incorporate from time to time. I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to experiment with a cutter if you're George Kirby, especially with his command. I could really envision a Corbin Burns type of usage of that cutter. It took Burns a while to realize that he could do that. And look what happened. So I think that could be, not everybody can throw a cutter, and some people just naturally throw it. They throw it by accident. That ends up happening with a lot of players. I mean, it happened with Mariano Rivera. Some players, they're just, their pitch is naturally cut. So it's not something that you can so easily teach. But if Kirby's able to command a cutter the way he's able to command his fastball, he could be Corbin Burns-esque. And even if he doesn't, because that's a big if, I don't know if he can do that or not. The fastball, the way he commands it, gives him a really high floor. I think that the curveball and changeup are average, but good enough that he could be a solid middle of the rotation big league arm. If that curveball turns into a plus pitch, like I think it's capable of, and the changeup is above average, now we're looking at a solid number two. And if he can figure out this cutter thing, then we're looking at maybe a Corbin Burns type of pitcher. So there's a wide range of outcomes, but I would say that none of them are bad, right? Like he's not a high variance guy in the respect that he could be bad or incredible. It's not that kind of volatility. I just think that there's a lot of different ways he can craft himself as a pitcher because he has the baseline of a high velo fastball and great command. And he's still trying to figure out exactly who he is with his secondaries. But the numbers have been great, even through double A. He was fantastic in high A, punching guys out, just overpowering them, which I expected. I really wanted to see how he would look in double A. And the one thing that stands out, and again, not that surprising, is in high A, more than 11 strikeouts per nine. He was just overpowering dudes. In double A, it was only 26 innings, but 9.69 strikeouts per nine. So the strikeout rate drops a little bit. I think that you can expect that to improve as his stuff continues to improve, but the numbers overall were really solid. And in fact, his FIP was better in double A than it was in high A. 2.25 FIP in double A, 2.44 in high A. The ERA was a little bit higher, 2.38 in high A, 2.77 in double A. So still a really, really strong year from him all around. 15 starts of just quality pitching, kept the walk rate in the low twos. Great year from George Kirby, and I think that he should be ready to go for the big leagues next year. He's a guy I'm really excited to see pitch, and I very much hope that the Mariners don't waste their time calling him up, because he's somebody that will learn on the fly really well at the big league level also, because the command is there. The command is there. I'm going to talk about Emerson Hancock and the rest of the top 10 in just a moment. Before I get there, reminder that this episode is brought to you by Bet Online. BetOnline is back and better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron as teams are back for another football season. We also have postseason baseball on the horizon as well. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for pro and college football action this season, as well as baseball. And with a new updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website or use your mobile device today and sign up, and you'll receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. If you just use the promo code LOCKEDON, that's one word, LOCKEDON, you'll get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. We've got football, baseball, basketball, boxing, and everything, right from your favorite casino games to just about anything else you can imagine. They have everything for you at BetOnline. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. Also brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar on the market, and they have so many different delicious flavors to choose from coconut, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, and German chocolate. My personal favorite right now is mint brownie. The best part about all of them is they are high in protein, 17 to 18 grams, low in calories, only 130 to 180 calories, low in sugar at only 4 to 5 grams, and only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs as well. What else could you want from a protein bar? And did you know that Built Bar is also the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team? Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, that's LOCKED15, to get 15% off your next order at built.com. Promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your next order. So let's get back to these Seattle Mariners prospects. And now it is Emerson Hancock. And some people might put Emerson Hancock ahead of George Kirby. And I'd say that Hancock has the higher ceiling with his stuff. But at the same time, while it's maybe not as likely that Kirby unlocks everything or brings in this cutter that I want so badly, there is still a level of Kirby having that ceiling too. But I think with Hancock, he is a little bit more of a margin for error while still hitting his ceiling because of the quality of his stuff. He's got an electric fastball. He's got a disgusting slider. He's got a changeup that is flash plus and a usable curveball. So he has a potential to have a very good three-pitch mix with a solid fourth pitch. That is enticing, and no doubt is. But the strikeout numbers were not where I would have expected it. Not a huge sample size. We only saw roughly 44 innings from Emerson Hancock this year, and he already pitched his way up to Double A. So very encouraging aspects. I would say the most encouraging thing is that he didn't walk very many guys. I had some questions about his command, but he kept the walks at around 3 per 9. But the strikeouts, right about 8.5, 8.6 per 9, was surprisingly low from a guy that has the stuff that Hancock has. I think a little bit is just him figuring out what the right usage of his pitches are, the right sequencing to be able to get those Ks. But the number 6 overall pick in 2020, before that, some people thought that he might go number 1 or number 2. Then he fell a little bit more after a little bit of a shaky start to that abbreviated college season and didn't get a chance to really show what he can do and show that the first couple starts were a fluke. I think he's a lot better than those starts, and we've seen that. He has been very impressive. The Mariners have done a good job with pitchers over the years. I'm just interested to see how they can continue to develop his stuff sequencing-wise and develop his pitchability, because his command is stronger than, or at least his control, I should say, is stronger than I thought it would be. But how is the command? How is he hitting his spots? And I think that is the thing that is standing out right now with somebody like Emerson Hancock. He is going to be a middle-of-the-rotation arm at the worst, especially with his ability to throw strikes now. But I think you're hoping for a lot more with the caliber of stuff he has. It should be a big offseason for him. I'm interested to see how he looks when he comes back next year. He should make some adjustments. I bet you the pitches will look a little bit different. I'm expecting that changeup to have a little bit more feel. I'm expecting the curveball to potentially be more of a viable pitch. The slider's already been devastating, but I want to see if he can locate it a bit more to his arm side as well. Right now it has that glove side break that just sweeps off the table, but I want to see him locate on both sides of the plate a little bit more, and that'll help him with his splits as well. Hancock has all the potential in the world. Still only 22 years old, big body at 6'4", 213. Not a ton of effort in his delivery. Plenty to be excited about, but definitely still some improvements that need to be made, but he's setting a good baseline for himself as well. Getting into the next prospect, and this was one I actually got a lot of questions on because a lot of people were surprised to see how high I had him, but it's Brandon Williamson, left-handed pitcher, of course, in that Mariners system that I have number 81 overall. And one of the frequent listeners who I know is a big Mariners fan, Alex, or Just Lions on Twitter, asked me and said, hey, why do you have Williamson ahead of Matt Brash? Because, of course, I had my whole episode on breakout pitching prospects and why Matt Brash is a top 100 dude. And it has nothing to do with my feelings on Matt Brash. I love Matt Brash as a prospect, who I'm going to get to because he's right after this. But Brandon Williamson, if we're talking about projectability here, he is 6'6". He's a lefty. He has made major improvements with his command and is striking guys out at a ridiculous rate. I mean, a ridiculous rate between high A and double A. And high A just was stupid. He was striking out 17 batters per 9 in 31 innings. 6 starts, he struck out 59 in 31 innings against just 10 walks. Gets the call up to Double A. 13 starts there. He has that strikeout rate drop to a disappointing 12.56 per 9. I mean, it's just crazy stuff. 67 and a third innings, he struck out 94. He's projectable with that 6'6", 210 frame. 23 years old. What I've really liked is that he has a pretty balanced arsenal too for somebody that a lot of people aren't really discussing as a legitimate top arm in this system, or at least not from what I've seen. With his height and his long levers, he is able to generate a really deceptive downhill plane from a high release point. And when he has this downer curveball that is ridiculously nasty, it's an 11-5 break. Reminds me a little bit of Rich Hill's breaking ball, who I just saw pitch yesterday. It's crazy. He's still going and he looked good. But that 11-5 break from a high release point is devastating, especially off of a 92 to 94 mile per hour fastball with high spin that gets on you and that has a lot of extension. He's able to make it feel like it gets on you quicker because he releases it so much closer to home plate than maybe your average pitcher. He creates some natural deception, but those two pitches tunneling off each other are ridiculous. He also mixes in a changeup and a cutter that are, I would say, dueling right now to be his third best offering, but both have a chance to be above average. The cutter, he commands much better to his glove side as a lefty, so that would mean in on the hands of righties, which is exactly what that pitch could be. His curveball is good enough to work on righties. It's not just a left-on-left curveball because of the vertical break it has. So imagine you see that 11-5 break on a very nasty curveball that backdoors you a little bit, so you're looking out over the plate, and then he brushes you in there with a mid-80s, upper-80s cutter that gets in on your hands and bores in on your hands as a righty. That's a miserable at-bat. It's just not fun, and I think that's going to be a big part of his game. He can also have that pitch as a ground ball inducer for lefties and get them to fly open with that front hip as well. It doesn't always have to be the curveball and the fastball. The changeup, he's shown a decent feel for at times. Other times, it gets a little bit too firm, but a viable pitch to give him another look against right-handed hitters. I think Williamson could be a stud. I obviously know that there's a little bit of risk in a 6'6" left-handed pitcher, but given that he's only walking 3/9, his command has gotten better. The stuff, multiple pitches that he can work off of, I think he's got a really good chance to be a number three, number four pitcher with a little bit more upside than that, and someone who will always get some swings and misses. I think people are sleeping on this guy to a similar degree in a similar way that people were sleeping on Trevor Rogers as he started to put it together in the minor leagues, but people still didn't quite give him the respect he deserved. And look at what Trevor Rogers is doing now. I don't think anybody had him projected as an ace even after the fantastic year he had in the minor leagues before getting called up in 2019. Moving on to a player who's having a fantastic year this year, Matt Brash. Matt Brash, who has probably the most ridiculous slider I've ever seen in my entire life. And it's slightly hyperbolic and slightly not because it defies physics and it's absolutely absurd. The fastball is electric as well. He's been said to have hit 101, sits more in the 94 to 96 range, will frequently hit a 7 or 8. This is a guy that could go into a bullpen right now and be a back end stud. But Brash has more than just that in the tank, especially because he's shown a decent feel for the changeup now. And he even mixes in an average, maybe slightly below average curveball to steal some strikes with. But the fastball slider combination has been enough for him to just dominate through the minor leagues and now earning himself a call up to try to help this team, this magical Mariners team, try to make that push. And I just can't believe that they're hanging in there still. It's been so much fun to watch them play. But to go over Matt Brash's numbers real quick between high A and double A, he's made 19 starts. And across his 9 starts first in high A, 2.55 ERA, he struck out 13/9. The walk rate was a bit high, though, at 5.3. I should say very high at 5.3. Then he gets the call up to double A, where the strike zone tightens a little bit. That didn't affect him in the strikeout department, 13 strikeouts per 9, and he actually improved in the walk department. There's still some room for improvement, but going from 5.31 walks per 9 to 3.76, he's almost at that palatable range where you can get away with that. I'd say if he gets to 3.5 walks or below, it's more palatable with the amount of swings and misses he gets. His overall numbers were just spectacular, though, in double A, 2.13 ERA, 2.53 FIP, 3.25 XFIP. So everything was strong across the board. He had less walks, 23 walks in 55 innings. He had 25 walks in 42 and a thirds innings in high A. So very solid. That's part of the reason why the Mariners were feeling a little bit more optimistic and felt like he could help them right now. I really like the way Brash delivers the baseball. It's from this three-quarters arm slot. It's relatively low for how much he is able to just whip that thing in his arm speed. And it's a little reminiscent of Max Scherzer, that lower arm slot, yet just electric stuff out of the hand. And it makes it really difficult to pick up fastball versus slider. And it's ironic that Matt Brash's best pitch is his slider. Now, I'm not saying he's Max Scherzer, but that level of deception, that cross-body delivery that is really hard to do as a pitcher, but once you're able to do it, is even harder to hit as a hitter. And the one thing with Brash, too, is that he actually has reverse splits because of this deceptive delivery. Lefties have a slash line of just around 125, 238, 232. which is utterly insane. And righties, it's not like they're good, but they're a little bit better. 224, 323, 304. So what's surprising about that is that his slider is actually so nasty and so hard to pick up even for lefties that he's able to back leg them without problem. It's actually worked for them, or worked for him, excuse me. The fastball is really hard to pick up for lefties because it's almost like they can't see his arm until the last minute because of how well he hides it. From righties, it's hard to pick up the fastball versus the slider because it looks like it's coming at your hip and then breaks away. So he has two different levels of deception for guys from both sides of the plate, and right now it's working better against lefties. And if that changeup develops, I mean, lefties might as well not even get into the box. Righties, if he can get that curveball going a little bit more, now you're worried about three different speeds. Or if the changeup is comfortable enough for him to go right on right, I would probably bet on the curveball being at least a viable pitch just against righties. But the slider fastball combination, like I said, he could be a back end arm in a bullpen right now, but he has the chance to be a very, very nasty starter with a little bit of questions around his command. That would be the question, and a little bit with the health, as he is not been able to entirely stay healthy since being drafted from Niagara. But overall, I really like the stuff. I like the delivery. He's deceptive. And you put the numbers together with what you see on the eye test, and you've got a really interesting prospect that I've been on for a while here. And I'm excited to see him breaking into most of the top 100 lists. Well, speaking of breaking into top 100 lists, this is a guy that I don't know how much longer I can hold him off. I think I might even, when we do this Arizona Fall League update, which is when I'm going to update the top 100 list, I might have to put Harry Ford in there, because Harry Ford, I don't like to put the draft guys in right away unless there's some guys that are just purely, you already know what you're getting a little bit, like the Jack Leiters of the world and even the Jordan Lawlers and those guys. Harry Ford, though, you kind of know that you're getting a very unique unicorn type of prospect, but I still don't quite know what we're getting here. But looking at the offensive side of things, the bat speed is crazy. There's more power in there than I thought as I've been able to watch him a little bit at the complex level. There is 60 grade raw power, and I think he's got the potential to have 60 game power in there. What I really like about him, though, is there's nothing more ominous than the omen of high school catchers. I mean, the track record on high school drafted catchers is terrible, right? It's absolutely awful. And that's why teams don't really like to draft high school catchers unless they are just as safe as it gets or just prolific, and it's pretty rare. Harry Ford, though, hedges a lot of that concern in a lot of ways because, one, I believe in the bat big time. The power's there. The hit tool is there. But he is a plus athlete as well. So if he's not able to stick behind the dish, which I think is about a bit of a coin flip, he can go to center field. He's that fast. He's a 65 runner. Legitimately clocked at 65 runner times, maybe even 70 by Eric Loggenhagen of Fangraphs, said that he clocked him at some 70 times at the complex level. If that's the case, maybe it's better to just move this guy to center field. With his power potential, with his feel to hit, you're looking at a very dynamic player that you don't really want to shred his knees behind the dish through the years. We could see a Dalton Varsho type of role, which then there's less pressure for him to be this supreme catcher because Varsho has a weak arm that limits him defensively behind the dish, but it allows, not that it really matters for the D-backs right now, but it will allow them when they're competitive, if that ever happens, to mix and match a little bit. And that is pretty unique, where if you have another catcher like Carson Kelly who's swinging it and you don't have somebody playing well in center field like Ketel Marte, he's been better at second base defensively, you can be unique there and put Varsho in center. I could see Harry Ford doing a little bit of everything, catching some, playing in the field some, and the speed should allow him to do a lot of different things, and it also gives him a big fallback plan if he can't stick behind the dish. With the bat and with his athleticism, he would have been a first-round prospect, I believe, catcher or not. The fact that he also catches is a massive bonus, because if he's able to stick behind the dish, aside from the fact that I do think that it's worth considering if it's worth it to put him back there, given that the athleticism could be a big part of his game, but if he does stick behind the dish, there's just not really a comp for him if he sticks behind the dish. JT Realmuto, fantastic athlete, but he's a supreme defender. Realmuto was a guy, though, that wasn't really a catcher coming up. Shortstop, played football, he was a quarterback. He was really built on his athleticism, too. Ford's even more athletic, and I think he's further along as a hitter than JT was when he was drafted by the Marlins. I've got my eyes on Harry Ford. I'm going to be following him pretty closely, and if he continues to show me more with the bat, I'm not even going to worry too much about the glove to put him into the top 100 list. Then when we start looking at how high on the top 100 list, that's where I'm going to start paying attention to where he's going to end up defensively and how he looks at whatever spot that is. But I still think with a decent arm, really good athleticism, and better blocking skills than I thought, at least from what I've seen, he has a decent shot to stick behind the dish. Another guy, speaking of who I've seen, somebody that I saw a lot of in the Cape and I was really excited about in the draft. I thought he could be one of the best steals in the draft, and we're looking at exactly that. Second round pick in 2020, 43rd overall, Zach Deloche. Zach Deloche is number 8 in my Mariners top 10 here. And Deloche won the minor league batting title. He won the Cape Cod League batting title, edging out Nick Gonzalez by hitting 353. It was crazy. And the one thing I really saw from Deloche, aside from his ability to spray the ball all over the field, to work count, to not chase, was that he changed his swing a little bit, or at least his setup, where he used to be a leg kick guy, and it just didn't work for him. It really didn't. His leg kick would cause his timing to be inconsistent. It would cause his weight to drift forward. He couldn't stay back with the leg kick, so he axed that and went to a toe tap. The toe tap allowed him to be on time more, and he was able to repeat it a lot more, and he has good bat speed. He has such a good swing. He wasn't taken away from it with the leg kick anymore after a really, really rocky sophomore season. And bringing out that new timing mechanism, he was much more effective and much more consistent. He's not the most exciting player in the world. He's not going to hit 40 home runs. I do think he's got 20 home runs in the tank, and he's got a .285 average with a good on-base percentage and above average defense in the outfield. He's an above average runner. There's nothing that jumps off the page, but my comp for him, and I really think that this is a great outcome from your second round pick, is I could see a Nick Markakis type of outcome in the best case scenario, or at least a Nick Markakis light in a more reasonable case scenario. He can steal 10 to 15 bags a year. He can play above average defense, and he can hit for sneaky power and hit for good average. I'm a big fan of his. I think he's a high floor prospect that still could impact the game and be an above average regular. I'm excited about Deloche just because I think he's going to climb quickly and is a nice, at the very least, a contact-oriented average outfielder in the big leagues. I do think he's got that in there in a very likely scenario. Next up, number 9 on the list is Connor Phillips, somebody that I don't have a ton on. I watched a lot of tape and I liked some of the raw stuff, but super inconsistent mechanics. Phillips is still 20 years old, 6'170", so not the most imposing, but another second round pick in 2020, 64th overall, and the stuff is pretty crazy. He's racked up crazy amount of strikeouts when he's on and when he's commanding, but when he is off, it can get a little bit disastrous. He seems to have struggles with repeating his mechanics, and the Mariners, I think, though, is that's something that they know, and they're honing in on that. He was recently drafted, like I said, in 2020. This was his first season to really be able to rack up the innings, but so far, I like the fastball and curveball. The curveball is a late-breaking, sharp pitch that, with the fastball, It's a solid 1-2 punch that, again, gives him a shot to be a good reliever. 60 grade fastball, I'd put a 60 on the curveball when he's commanding it. He's still trying to figure out what that third pitch is going to be. I think there's a better chance that it's the slider than the changeup, but you never know with pitchers that young. And obviously the command has a long way to go, but the swing and miss stuff is there. There's a chance that he can become a rotation arm if he can really put together those mechanics. I'm never going to relegate a guy to the bullpen at 20 years old when he has shown flashes of command. I mean, he had an outing this year where he went 6 innings with one walk and 13 Ks, and he threw 58 strikes out of his 86 pitches. So there's been moments where he has shown it. So I'll never relegate a guy to the bullpen that early, but there is a chance that he ends up there, and it's probably more likely that he ends up there, but he's still got a chance to stick in the rotation. And if he does go to the pen, could be a very interesting arm in that back end there. Last player in this top 10, Alberto Rodriguez, outfielder, high A, came over in the Taiwan Walker deal. Rodriguez was somebody that the Blue Jays were, I guess, okay with dealing because he frustrated them a little bit per reports, where he showed up a little bit out of shape. He showed up not very mobile, and it was affecting his batted ball data, and it was affecting his defense. He's already not a guy that's very great on defense, but he has a very nice swing, and he's got above average raw power with natural lift, and he has a chance to be a power bat. A lot of people like him for his power potential. He hit 10 home runs in 93 low A games and walked at a 12% clip, which got him that promotion to high A. The swing is It's pretty. It's an uppercut-oriented swing that's geared for home runs, but it also is one that he seems to repeat pretty well and doesn't have a ton of effort. His lower half is a bit inconsistent, and that's okay. That's normal for a 20-year-old, and that's something I want to see improve is does he continue to try to go to the pull side so frequently? Is he going to continue to drift and be that inconsistent hitter with his lower half? That will hold him back, and that's one of the things that's a big separator from young players. The swing has twinges of Jazz Chisholm in there, so there could be some swing and miss, especially with how steep it is, but I could see 25 home runs and a solid walk rate as the best case scenario for somebody like him. Before I wrap up, some other names that are worth watching: Adam Mako, a really tough lefty who I will probably at this point with the injury concerns relegate to the bullpen. But again, somebody that I wouldn't be shocked if he could make it work, but he could be in a big league bullpen by next year. And the Mariners, who are looking to win, they might just decide to go with that, especially with some of the health issues that he's had, another obstacle for him this year. A really good mid-90s fastball from a tough release point and a plus curveball. He could be a nice lefty for them in that bullpen next year. Also, Milcar Perez, third baseman, still a teenager, far away from action at the big league level. He's going to take some time, but I was really happy with what I saw from him. I like the offensive profile, a good approach, a smooth swing that's geared for line drives. There's some intriguing components to his bat as well. And then the last guy, another guy from the 2020 draft that I thought was a steal, Kaden Polkovich. He's a toolsy switch hitting second baseman. He has above average pop from both sides of the plate. He does have an uber aggressive approach that at times can get him into trouble, but he's a plus athlete with the ability to play all over the field. He's logged games at second base, center field, shortstop, and third base. I do have some concerns as to whether he'll be able to hit consistently, but I think that there is a good chance that you can have a dynamic athlete, switch-hitting utility player at the big league level, which is very intriguing, especially where they got him in the draft this past year, or in 2020, excuse me. That'll do it for today's episode and this breakdown of the Mariners system. If you want the full write-ups, go over to justbaseball.com and go give it a read. I have in-depth write-ups on each of those 10 guys that I really did enjoy putting together, and I'm going to do it across the rest of the teams in the major leagues and top 10s across all 30 teams at justbaseball.com. As always, thank you for listening, and I look forward to talking prospects with you later in the week.